नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। भूषं स्थानं कृतं येन सादिद्गिरिवनादिभिः सीमाच्चाभूतनिर्वृत्याय द्वीपे द्वीपे द्विभागशः। To stop the quarreling among different peoples, Maharaj Priyavrat marked boundaries at rivers and at the edges of mountains and forests so that no one would trespass upon another's property. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The example set by Maharaj Priyavrat is marking off different states is still followed. As indicated here, different classes of men are destined to live in different areas, and therefore the boundaries of various tracts of land, which are described here as islands, should be defined by different rivers, forests, and hills. This is also mentioned in relation to Maharaj Prithu, who was born from the dead body of his father by the manipulation of great sages. Maharaj Prithu's father was very sinful, and therefore a black man called Nishada was first born from his dead body. The Nishada race was given a place in the forest because by nature they are thieves and rogues. As animals are given places in various forests and hills, men who are like animals are also destined to live there. One cannot be promoted to civilized life unless one comes to Krishna consciousness. For by nature, one is destined to live in a particular situation according to one's karma and association with the modes of nature. If men want to live in harmony and peace, they must take to Krishna consciousness, for they cannot achieve the highest standard while absorbed in the bodily concept of life. Maharaj Priyavrat divided the surface of the globe into different islands so that each class of men would live peacefully and not clash with the others. The modern idea of nationhood has gradually developed from the divisions made by Maharaj Priyavrat. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, entitled The Activities of Maharaj Priyavrat, Text Number 40. This chapter, which is so very instructive on so many levels, begins with Priyavrat Maharaj sitting with his Guru Maharaj, Narada Muni, on top of a mountain in a forest, exclusively dedicated for the purpose of self-realization. This in itself is extraordinary, because Swayambhuva Manu had several sons, and Priyavrat was the eldest. That means he was the heir to the entire kingdom of the entire earth. In the age of Kali, so many people have tried and fought for such a position of being the ruler of the earth, but everyone fails. At the most, you can get a little country, and then usually there's a revolution against you, or you're voted out, or your term ends. But king means for life, until by your own free will you decide to retire. That's very powerful type of control. You rule the entire earth until you decide by your own sweet will to retire. And then you have the full power to decide which of your sons will take the throne after you. And the son, the father lives through the son. So in that sense, continue to rule the world through your expansion. And in the scriptures, it's very rare do we find any king of the world in days of the past ever being assassinated. There's no question of them being voted out. There's no term of their term expiring. And we never see any assassinations. In India, prime ministers are assassinated. In America, presidents are assassinated. So many parts of the world, it's very common. Political leaders are assassinated. And in order to prevent such assassinations, so much security is required. So much security. I remember some years ago, Palimar Matswami bought Udupi Krishna a crown of diamonds that cost over 1 crore of rupees. Only about this big. So people were complaining, what is this, spending a full crore of rupee just to buy diamonds for a deity? Why don't you use that money to heal the sick? Why don't you use that money to feed the poor? Why don't you use that money for educating the illiterate? So he had a very nice answer, which I've never forgotten. He said, in India, how much does the taxpayers pay for the security of the prime minister every day? Every time he goes somewhere, yes? There's hundreds and hundreds of people in his security. I remember when President Clinton came to Bombay, they spent crores of rupees just for his hotel room. Yes? They renovated a whole floor of a hotel just for his visit. And they closed all the roads. That means they had thousands of police blocking all the traffic and total security everywhere. They were looking with their devices. Crores of rupees they spent. And he just took one drive down Marine Drive. So when a president or prime minister, they have their own jet, and they have their own security of their own intelligence, and for weeks in advance, they're just making sure no apartments in anywhere can possibly, you know, shoot down. So he said, just for the entourage of one little prime minister, they're spending crores of rupees a day, or one little president. And he's only the leader of one little tiny tract of land, in one little speck of a planet, in one little speck of a universe within the cosmic manifestation. And Udupi Krishna is the supreme lord, the controller, the ultimate king of all spiritual and material worlds. And we're spending a crore of rupees for him and you're complaining? But nobody complains when we spend it for hundreds and thousands of times more for some political leaders. Hare Krishna. Does that make sense? It's a very good argument. What can we not offer to Krishna? When you water the root of the tree, the whole tree is satisfied and prospers. That is the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here is Maharaj Priyavrat. He is being offered a completely safe and consistent position as the king of the world, undisputed, with all the facilities of palaces, and he can choose any beautiful queen he wants. He could even have more than one if he likes. Great facilities, and power, and prestige, and opulence. But he rejected it all. It's all Maya. It's all illusion. It's all temporary. Who needs it? He didn't want power. He didn't want position. He didn't want opulence. He wanted Krishna. So he told his younger brother, Uttanapada, you be king. I'm going with Gurudev. I'm going to join the Brahmachari ashram. And he went up to the mountains where he performed tapasya, and he was completely satisfied. He wasn't thinking, oh, what did I do? Why did I act so hastily and give up so much? No, even when Uttanapada grew old and he retired, he gave to Dhruva, and Dhruva to his descendant, and his descendant, until there were no more descendants. Then Swayambhuva Manu understood, we have to have a descendant who's king, and there's no more descendants. So he went back to Priyavrat and asked him, be the king. This is generations and generations and generations later. And he was still up there, just completely immersed in meditating on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He had no ambitions, personally. He didn't want to do it. In Krishna consciousness, we shouldn't be ambitious for position. We should be ambitious for service. And what is service? Service means, how could I serve? Whatever way Guru, my seniors, and the assembled Vaishnavas think I could best serve, I'll surrender. To have power, to have control, to have facilities is actually something we shouldn't want. But as an austerity for service, we may have to accept those things. Now, Narada Muni, we never even hear that he has a house. He's really Parivrajakacharya, Paramhamsa. He's just traveling around everywhere. And every now and then he'd stop and give some nice katha to Priyavrat Maharaj. And he was content. But when Lord Brahma came and told, we need you to rule the kingdom, then Narada Muni, Swayambhuva Manu, everyone agreed. And Priyavrat became king as a matter of duty and service. But sometimes in the process of taking responsibilities for Krishna's service, there's many risks. And devotees are willing to take those risks for Krishna, for Guru, and for the sake of serving the Vaishnavas and helping humanity. Priyavrat knew the risks. That's why he wanted nothing to do with it. He was an avowed brahmachari, and he was happy. But here his seniors are telling him, you could best serve by being king. So reluctantly, he got married. Reluctantly, he moved into the palace. He sat on the throne. He wore the crown. And he became the controller of the whole planet. But he did it all as a humble service to Krishna. He did it all in a spirit of servitude to every living entity. He never considered, Janasya moho yamaham mameti, that I am this body, or my position, my wealth, my family, or anything is mine. He understood everything is Krishna's. I'm just the servant. He's the supreme king. I'm just his caretaker. Srila Prabhupada gives example of a viceroy. A viceroy acts on behalf of the king, but he takes nothing for himself. If someone gives jewels to the viceroy, he has to give it to the king's treasury. If he keeps even one little trace of a jewel for himself, he could be punished severely because he's representative. That's what type of king Priyavrat was. Everything was for Krishna. But as he suspected, just by the association with performing all of these duties, political duties, domestic duties, family duties, economic duties, by that association, he became entangled and attached. Arivo, happens to the best of us. He became entangled and attached just due to the environment that was surrounding him. But when he realized what was happening, because he did it in the service of the Lord, Krishna will protect his devotees. Yes, Priyavrat Maharaj did it for Krishna, but he did something very dangerous for Krishna. He took on a lot of responsibilities and dealt with a lot of mundane issues, and soon he found himself attached, infatuated. But because of the blessings of the Guru and Krishna, he prayed to the Lord, save me. How abominable this is, save me. This was his humility. He didn't try to justify that, what do you expect? I didn't want to do it, so let me enjoy now that I have to do it. He didn't justify like that. He was so sincere, he was so genuine, he was so humble that he was praying to Krishna. He was criticizing himself. Alas, how condemned I have become because of my sense gratification. I have now fallen into material enjoyment, which is exactly like a covered well. You know the story of a covered well. If you want to trap someone, you put some really nice sitting straw and sitting place, and you put it over the well so it looks, you can't detect that there's a well. It just looks like the nicest possible place to sit and to relax. Yes, it's just covered with all nice grasses and straws. And you sit on it to enjoy, and you fall in the well. Now this is, Prahlad Maharaj talks about this well under Kupam throughout the scriptures. This is a very, very common example of material existence. That's how Maya traps us. All the enjoyments and pleasures of this world are like covered wells. They look so nice. Nice to touch, nice to see, nice to taste, nice to smell. But when we go to enjoy something, yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukha jonaya evate atyanta vanta konteya nate shuramate buddha. Krishna warns us in Gita, an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are born of the pleasures that the senses experiences through the objects. They are sources of misery. An intelligent person does not take part in them, because they're dukalayam ashashvatam, they're temporary. The more we try to enjoy egoistic, selfish desires, which appear by Maya to be so pleasing, so nice, so promising and hopeful, but we sit and then we fall deep down into that deep, dark well. So Priyavrat is not trying to justify or say, it's not my fault, it's Gurudev's fault. He's the one who told me to do this service. It's Brahma's fault. He's the one who told me to do this. No. I have now fallen into material enjoyment, which is exactly like a covered well. I have had enough. I am not going to enjoy anymore. Just see how I have become like a dancing monkey in the hands of my wife. Because of this, I am condemned. So because Priyavrat was doing his service in an honest and humble way, according to the desire of Guru and Krishna, he was protected. And what was his protection? That when he got entangled, he understood it. The Lord in his heart awakened the proper understanding by his mercy. Sarvasya cha hum hridi sannivishto matasmatir jnanapohanam cha. Krishna is a source of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. It's Krishna in his heart that awakened the proper intelligence when he was most in need. because he was surrendered. And therefore, in a very, very responsible and completely Krishna conscious manner, he allocated his duties to his sons to take over. And what a wonderful example. And then it explains he immersed himself so deeply in Guru Seva and Krishna Bhakti that his heart became the place where Krishna's pastimes were always being enacted. His heart was pure. For a devotee, when your heart becomes pure, it becomes Vrindavan. Krishna enacts his pastimes within the heart of a pure devotee. And such a pure devotee wants to invite everyone to these most supremely enjoyable pastimes of the Lord. So here it is explaining, after Maharaj Priyavrat has retired from his governmental services, it describes his glories. And today's verse is explaining one of the very special contributions Priyavrat Maharaj has done. To stop the quarreling amongst different people, Maharaj Priyavrat marked boundaries at rivers and at the edges of mountains and forests so that no one would trespass another's property. Srila Prabhupada explains that Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, everything is the property of God. Proprietorship means control. If you actually own something, you have control of that thing. If there is a power beyond you that controls it, then actually the proprietorship belongs to that power. So what do we have control over? Janasya mohoya mahamameti. Illusion means my body. Is it actually my body? Do you have control over it? Even you're sitting in a very respectable situation and everyone's looking at you and then you have to pass water. Right? You don't want to have to pass water in such an embarrassing situation. But you have to go out and make some excuse and go out and pass water. Have any of you had that experience? So we're not controlling this body. We don't have control. There's powers of nature that are controlling this body. Nobody wants to get sick. But has there ever been anyone in modern times that doesn't get sick? And no one wants to grow old. When you're a young boy, you're thinking, I want to be old, I want to be old. But then when you're old, you're thinking, I want to be young, but it's too late. Can't reverse. When Prabhupada explained in Puri, he was in Puri with the devotees and they were walking along the seashore, and he said, when I was young, I was jumping and I was playing in the waves and I was doing, and now I'm walking with three legs with this cane. So whoever we are, this body is subjected to the power of time, and ultimately we have to die. That means the body is taken away from the soul. Even you want it, you want to hold on to it, but you cannot. Time is the controller of everything within this world. Time is proprietor of everything in this world. Yes? Time has control over everything. And Krishna tells in Gita, time I am. Krishna has created, Krishna maintains, and Krishna ultimately destroys everything that exists within material existence. So everything is the property of God. Nothing is mine. As soon as we come to that point of ignorance, of thinking anything is mine, then there must be conflict. Because it's an unnatural thing. We're fighting over stolen property. Might is right. It's like Prabhupada explains, he was giving a lecture in America. He said, now you have all your military and everything, that this is America. You're saying, I am in America, I am an American, and this is America. This is my land. There was a song, this land is your land, this land is my land. From the Redwood Forest to the, to where? To the New York Island. He's from New York. You're very proud of that island. So we're thinking, this is my land. And if an Indian wants to go to America, where is your visa? Where is your immigration? And they make you stand in line somewhere in Bombay for hours and hours and hours, and then they interrogate you like anything. Yes? And then they might give you 6 months or 1 year or something. It's my land. And here in India, but Prabhupada explains, just 500 years ago, there wasn't a single white man in the whole North or South America. It belonged to the Indians. And it wasn't a universal, nationwide Indian chief. There was hundreds of little tribes, and each one had their own property, and they were always fighting over, you know, which mountain belongs to them. And then all of a sudden, these Europeans from Spain and Britain and France, they just come in with all of their modern technologies of weaponry, and they just conquer and kill and murder and plunder and exploit and take the land away, and then put the Indians on some little useless piece of land, and then they develop it, and they say, this is my land. 500 years ago, it wasn't yours. You stole it. You stole it from the Indians. American Indians. And now you're calling it yours. And in India, yes, the Mughals came in and conquered. This is my land. They had control, they had the power. And then the British, through very clever means of economics and everything, they came in and they took over and cast the Mughals out. This is my land. And then that historical day at August Kranti, where we where we had our program last night, the leaders of the revolution declared, this is not Britain land, this is the Indians land. Yes? Kick out Britain, kick out. Prabhupada explained that the chiefs of the revolution movement, their idea was kick the British in the face with your foot and get them out of this place. And they did it. Haribo. So whose land is it? Srila Prabhupada explains, land is land. That's how Prabhupada explains. Land is land, that's all. If you actually look at it from a reasonable, logical, it's not American land and Indian land and Pakistani land and Kashmiri land and Russian land and Japanese land and African land. And it's land. Land is land, that's all. Man just puts designations, and these designations are always changing. But all land belongs to God. He creates, he maintains, he controls. So as long as we're thinking that I am this body, which is an illusion because the body belongs to God, it's not under our control, and this is mine, then there has to be fighting. It's all based on this basic principle of false ego. So Priyavrat Maharaj was a very responsible and good king. He saw that there was quarreling in his kingdom because different types of people have different type of natures and they have different way of doing things and they were conflicting with one another. So in the service of God, it was his duty to stop the quarrel. Because everything becomes, all progress becomes very much hampered when there is quarrel. And it was his responsibility as the king to do everything within his power to stop the fighting and quarreling amongst the citizens of the world. So he made divisions so that everybody had their respective area and they wouldn't conflict with people who had other views and other nature. However, Priyavrat Maharaj did it in such a way that he was the king of the world. Everyone was under him. And he divided things in such a way where he could actually harmonize into one holistic planet that didn't quarrel. It was divided under one vision, with one purpose. Yes? And that's really what Varnashram Dharma is about. Varnashram Dharma is, there's divisions according to one's varna and ashram. But for what purpose? Chatur varna mayastristam guna karma vibhagasha. According to a person's nature, according to a person's actions. Are you going now? Where are you going? Back to Riga? Let us Jamunamai, Baladev, and Bhaktiman, who are our special guests, and these other two wonderful devotees are now going back to Latvia. Yes, we thank you very much for coming. Everyone very wholeheartedly, enthusiastically thank them for being amongst us these last few days by loudly chanting. Thank you very much. What was the lecture about? Varnashram Dharma. So Krishna divides society according to people's nature and the activities that they naturally want to perform according to their natures. But it's all done for a unified purpose. The purpose of the whole Varnashram divisions is so that everyone could work together harmoniously for spiritual perfection. One body. The Brahmins and Sannyasis are the head of society. The Grihastas and Vaishyas are belly of society. The Kshatriyas, Vanaprastas are arms of society. And the Brahmacharis and Sudras are the legs of society. So according to their function in Varna and Ashram, it's one body working together to move the body forward. The legs are not in disagreement with the head. If they are, there's a big problem. Yes, if your own, you're considered insane. They'll put you in a mental hospital if somebody sees you with your arms punching your face. Huh? Or if your legs are kicking your stomach. What is this man, crazy? He's kicking his own stomach. He's punching his own head. Or his head is biting his legs. This is all nonsense. This is insanity. So the body is all, every part of the body is sacred and precious and is meant to serve the whole of the body. That's what Varnashram is about. Every part of the society is meant for the purpose of the whole society, to harmonize and work together for the whole society. And what is the purpose of human society? Nayam deho deha bhajam naloke kastan kaman arhati vibhujam jay tapo divyam putra kayena satvam sudyedyasyam brahma sokyam tvananta. Human life is not meant to enjoy sense gratification like the hogs and dogs that eat stool. Human life is meant for tapasya. And what is that tapasya for? The divine realization and the happiness that that brings of Krishna consciousness. So Varnashram system is so beautiful, it is so perfect, when people understand Daivi Varnashram, its purpose. Atapumbir vijastrestas varnashrami vibhagasha shvanushtatasya dharmasya samsadir haditoshanam. The whole purpose of all four varnas and ashrams, the whole purpose of life is just to please Krishna. That is our center. That is our focus. That is how we are harmonizing, to please Krishna. That makes everything auspicious. And in the age of Kali, we all unite to please Krishna through the Sankirtan of the chanting of the holy name. Raj Bihari Prabhu, please forgive us if we woke you up. He's not sleeping, but his offering yesterday was discussing like this. So in a similar way, Priyavrat Maharaj divided the lands of earth so that different types of people who have different natures could actually have their own place, like-minded association, and he was orchestrating and very, very carefully making sure that all the different regions that he divided were not quarreling. The whole purpose of the divisions was to stop quarrel. Now we see in Kali Yuga, the more divisions, the more quarrels. Yes? You make a division, but then they both build up their own armies and militaries and weapons, and then there's wars. That was not Priyavrat's intention. It was just the opposite of that. It was to stop quarrel. Yes, it is the duty of the leader to stop the quarreling amongst the subjects. And in Kali Yuga, this is very, very difficult. Because the two prominent symptoms of the age of Kali are quarrel and hypocrisy. This is the age of quarrel. To think there will not be quarrel in Kali Yuga is like thinking you're not going to get wet if you jump in the ocean. It's inevitable. It's like seasons. The rainy season, due to unnatural karmic situation, some places the rainy season doesn't even come and there's drought. But by God's grace, Bombay, I don't know why, I don't know what pious acts have been performed here, but by their grace, there's always good rains in the monsoons. Yes? Sometimes torrential rains. So when you know the monsoon rainy season is coming, you understand that it's going to happen. I have to prepare myself. If you're living in Detroit, which is a northern place of America, you know the winter's coming, and there's going to be snow, and there's going to be freezing cold. So you prepare yourself. It's simply not hot and sunny ever in this winter in the northern provinces. So similarly, the season of Kali Yuga is symptomized by quarrel and hypocrisy. Imminent tendency amongst any two people to quarrel in this age. Why is that? Because Kali Yuga is a time when the false ego is exceedingly inflated and exasperated. And false ego is the root cause of all conflict. False ego means thinking in terms of I am this body and its designations and whatever is in relation or apparent proprietorship of this body is mine. That is ahankar. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvash. Ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. Bewildered souls think in terms of this ahankar, false ego. I am this body and I am the doer of my acts. It's being carried out by nature. Krishna is the controller of nature. So in Kali Yuga, because of a diminishing of religious principles, the fever of the false ego becomes more and more prominent. And then there's more and more quarrel. You see, the mode of goodness, there's not much scope for serious quarrels in the mode of goodness. Because the symptom of the mode of goodness is charity. Symptom of a mode of goodness which leads us toward Vaishnavism is really coming toward paradukkha-dukkhi, that I'm really concerned with others. Those in the mode of goodness are not attached to the fever of proprietorship. They're not attached to the fever of prestige. Those in the mode of goodness actually live very morally, very piously, and very, very charitably for the welfare of others. These are the symptoms of goodness. We're charitable. We're respectful. We honor others. But as we go down in the modes of passion and ignorance, what happens is our nature, we become more greedy, more egoistic, more self-centered, and less thinking in terms of how I can serve others. So because the age of Kali is so much infected by passion and ignorance, and goodness is so much compromised, people are very, very self-centered and egoistic. Two people in the mode of goodness, it's not very difficult to mediate their quarrels. Just a little direction, and oh, yes, yes, I'm Prabhu, my obeisances, I'm wrong. No, no, I'm wrong. No, 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 I'm wrong. No, no, I'm sorry. No, 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 I'm sorry. They argue like that. This is the type of quarrel. This is a mode of goodness quarrel. I'm sorry I did this to you. No, no, it's my fault I did it. No, no, I did it. No, 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 you didn't do anything. Please forgive me. No, no, please forgive me. I want to touch your feet. No, no, I want to touch your feet. These are Vaishnav quarrels. You don't need mediation for these quarrels because everyone's happy. But when we get influenced by the mode of passion and the mode of good and the mode of ignorance, then we start thinking in terms of our own self-centered ambitions and conceptions. And there's problems, there's quarrel. But what happens when there's quarrel? Real progress becomes stifled. Look at politically. When political parties are quarreling, oftentimes, you know, who suffers? The general people. If the management of a corporation, if the big leaders are quarreling amongst each other, usually they end up dividing up and everything becomes very, very much reduced. Yes? And in a spiritual organization, that's where quarrel has the greatest danger. And it's everywhere. If you study the history of Christianity, at one time there was one church. Actually, Jesus, you know, he just preached to a class of Jewish people who were in what is now called Israel. That's all. He just had his flock of maybe a few thousand people, and there was only maybe a dozen or two who were really serious. And the others were just followers. And that's all. But then a king, Constantine, he accepted Christianity and he made it the state religion. And it was the Roman Catholic Church, yes? But then there was quarrels. And it divided into the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church, and then within the Catholic Church, so many quarrels. And then the Protestant Church, Protestant meant Protestant. That means protesting. It was like the August Kranti of Catholicism. they revolted against the Pope, and they revolted against his representatives, and they wanted their own church and their own properties and their own doctrine and their own identity. Arrivo. But then they started arguing, and now there's literally thousands of branches. Yes? Thousands of branches. And hardly any two of them cooperate with each other because they have their own egos. And from that, they have their own conceptions and their own ideas that they hold sacred. And there's so much problems. And amongst religions, so many difficulties, so many conflicts between different religions of the world. And they're all serving the same God. Different name, different idea. But they're killing each other. Brothers are killing each other over what the Father wants. And the Father only wants one thing. Don't quarrel. Arrivo. Prabhupada explained, even within an institution, one guru and so many followers are fighting amongst each other. And there's nothing that causes more pain. Prabhupada quotes that book, Shah Jahan. And it's all about the atrocities of Aurangzeb. How he killed his brothers and he plundered his family members and he imprisoned his father. And somebody asked him, why did you name this book Shah Jahan? You should have named it Aurangzeb because it's all about Aurangzeb's atrocities. He said, you don't understand. The purpose of the book is to show how Shah Jahan suffered seeing his children quarreling, fighting, and killing each other in this way. Similarly, if we want to understand what is the real purport and meaning of the Vedas, we have to understand from the author, Vyasadev, who wrote Vedanta Sutra, and who wrote his own commentary, Srimad Bhagavatam. So yes, when children fight, it causes such pain to the father. Sometimes they do it right in the father's life, and other times they wait till he dies, then they fight it out. Yes? Father worked so hard, foaming at the mouth all his life to raise money so that he has an estate and property and wealth and business or whatever so that his children, after he dies, can enjoy nicely in life. And oftentimes what happens after he dies, they end up becoming the worst enemies fighting over it. Classic case I saw on news some years ago. A man dies. And the father, some years before, said that I want to be put in deep freeze, my body, in a freezing system, until they find the medical science finds the miracle cure of my disease, and then they will cure it and bring me back to life. Now, he was a very, very, very wealthy man. Huh? There was somebody recently, not that person. So what happened is he's put in deep freeze by the father, I mean by the son. But there was a problem, that when his body was in deep freeze, his estate was also in deep freeze. Because the fact that there's hope that he may, what is the word? He may raise from the dead. He may be resurrected. Therefore, you can't, none of the children had access to any of the property. So the daughter, she said, you know, until we pull that plug out of the freezer, all his estate, all his wealth is in deep freeze, and they're never going to find a cure to these diseases. This is all utopia, dreaming. So, you know, we should... I have a big share of the estate, but it doesn't come to me till he's dead. He's dead, but it doesn't go into action until whatever. He could be in deep freeze for generations. So there was a big, massive fight in courts between the brother and the sister over whether he was dead or not. And ultimately, she paid someone off to unplug it.
아니요. But in the meanwhile, there was massive fighting in the courts, battling it out. And how many times does this happen?
And actually, if these fathers knew that all this work is going to make bitter, vengeful, hateful enemies amongst my children, he would have probably just lived a simple life. He's doing it for the children. But again and again and again, because there are four places where Kali rules: illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating, and wherever there is greed for wealth. Then along with it will come quarrel and hypocrisy. So Prabhupada gives example of the spiritual master. The spiritual master, the two sons are massaging him, one on one side and one on the other. And each one wants the father to favor him. So instead of doing the massage nicer, they're trying to do the massage as nice as they can. But just to ensure that the father favors him, one son reaches over and with nails, just stabs him with his nails. And the other one like pinches him in the other man's side. And the other reaches to the other side and punches him and kicks him. And the father's suffering like anything. So similarly, when devotees fight, who does it hurt? It hurts the devotees because they can't make proper spiritual advancement. Why? Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati kutopi. If we please Guru, we please Krishna. If we don't please Guru, we don't please Krishna. And all our spiritual advancement is based on pleasing Guru and Krishna. Yes? And every guru wants his disciples to cooperate and work together. And Prabhupada is the founder Acharya of ISKCON, the supreme guru of our society. He told us very clearly, you can show your love for me by how you cooperate. And even during his time when there was conflict and quarrel within his society, Prabhupada said he was getting headaches from it. He said, you're just beating my head. There's nothing that hurt him more. So it doesn't please him. So to end quarrel from the point, Prabhupada is explaining in this wonderful purport that all of this quarrel and everything else, Maharaj Priyavrat divided the surface of the globe. Actually, if men want to live in harmony and peace, then they must take to Krishna consciousness, for they cannot achieve the highest standard while absorbed in the bodily concept of life. So this is what Lord Chaitanya has given us, Krishna consciousness, to resolve the problems of the age of Kali, which means quarrel and hypocrisy. So what an acute injustice it is to the planet if we're supposed to be giving the philosophy and the culture where people can harmonize with Krishna in the center, and they see us quarreling, they see us fighting over such petty, stupid things as position or opinions, or proprietorship or facilities. When Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur saw that his leading disciples were quarreling over facilities and position, he said, there is a fire in the mat. According to Bhakti Vinod Thakur, the fire that blazed in the forest of Vrindavan after Krishna subdued Kaliya was a demon that represents intercommunal conflict within Vaishnav community. It's a demon. It's fire. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was so disturbed. His disturbance wasn't due to a lack of ecstatic Krishna consciousness. His disturbance was due to compassion. Paradukaduki. He saw that if the devotees are quarreling, then millions and millions and millions of people within the world are going to be bereft of the opportunity for Krishna consciousness. How could they have faith? They read our books and see, they read all about a world where there can be peace and harmony within and amongst ourselves. And if they read the books and they see devotees criticizing and politicking and fighting and disagreeing over such petty differences, that you did this to me and you said that to me, or I want this, why should you have that? It's all so petty. It's all so nonsense. It's all maya. It's all false ego. To try to dress up the disgusting, gross, false ego in some beautiful, beautiful garment of justification that actually I am representing the highest standards of what should be done to promote bhakti. Everyone does that. If you're a devotee, everyone's right. But Prabhupada said, you can show your love for me by how you cooperate, because if you cooperate, you can set a standard that will give faith to the rest of the world. And if you don't show that standard to the rest of the world, people will not take our philosophy seriously, and you're cheating them. After millions of species of life, a person becomes a human being. He has the chance in the age of Kali to become perfect simply by chanting the holy names. But if you're breaking regulative principles, if you're abusing each other, if you're fighting with each other, then who's going to take it seriously? People who like to fight will take it seriously. People who want politics and facility, they'll take it seriously. But we want to have a society where people who are actually searching for something real and genuine will take it seriously. But we have to show them something real and genuine, and that's why Prabhupada established these temples, to show the highest standard of Vaishnava behavior, where despite so many egoistic differences, devotees are Krishna conscious. That means pleasure to Guru and pleasure to Krishna is our priority, and on that basis, we will become friends, we will unite, and we will serve one another for the welfare of humanity and for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. Priyavrat was making so many arrangements just to resolve quarrels and keep people united. And Prabhupada said, you can show your love for me by how you cooperate. So in the absence of Krishna consciousness, there may be so many methods we have to do to somehow or other create ceasefires. But actually, if there's Krishna consciousness, well, trinadapi sunichena taror iva sahish amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. If there's Krishna consciousness, we'll understand that there is a higher purpose than what we're fighting about, to please Guru and Krishna. And that means we have to work things out in a nice way so that our society will have respect and integrity, so that there will be a genuine manifestation that we are responsible for to actually portray the spirit and the teachings of our guru to the world. It is the spiritual responsibility of every follower of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to live in such a way with each other to give integrity and faith in the eyes of the world. That is our responsibility. That is what Krishna consciousness is about. When devotees have loving friendships with each other, this is explained also in fourth canto, to Prachetas. Krishna told Prachetas, because all of you are so friendly and loving toward each other, I am pleased and I have come to grant all benedictions upon you. That's Sankirtan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught by his example with his associates what loving relationships. And there were so many differences of people. Kolabecha Sridhar was a very poor man. Budi Manta Khan was a multimillionaire. King Prataparudra was a king. Ramananda Rai was a politician by occupation. Swarup Damodar Goswami was a sannyasi. All different. Haridas Thakur was a malecha by birth. But they were all completely in cooperation despite all their differences. Why? Because the pleasure of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was their purpose. So when devotees unite in this type of consciousness, if devotees develop actual honor and friendship with one another, then Krishna will manifest individually and collectively in a most extraordinary way when we perform the Sankirtan of the Holy Name. And then we can actually do real, tangible service for our sampradaya. And we could make spiritual advancement in the process. So just don't take seriously your false egos. I know it's harder than it sounds. But that is the challenge of our sincerity, not to take serious our false egos or all the opinions and conceptions that our false egos are creating. Take serious the will of Sri Guru and Gauranga. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Brajbihari Prabhu, please give us your insight on this subject matter, please. The microphone is just now coming to you.
Mahaprabhu just said I have to. So,
huh?
Mahaprabhu, I was trying to avoid saying anything, and Mahaprabhu said I have to say something. So I have to follow his order.
I guess you don't want to quarrel with Mahaprabhu.
Not with a lawyer, no. I think this is the challenge that we face in our society, that, like, for example, in the past couple of years, I've studied the common ways that people in the world know how to avoid quarrel, or how to the term that's used these days is transform quarrel. In other words, that conflict is not bad in and of itself, but that if it can be on the far side of conflict, there are better relationships that they can bring things to a head that can be, if they can be dealt with properly, then we can actually improve our relationships. So having studied all that, I could say, you know, I'm kind of like coming full circle and seeing more, or thinking more in terms of your lecture today. And that is that how to bring I think you used the word techniques, or those ideas from the outside world, but then how to apply them within the Vaishnava Siddhanta and within the rule of Vaishnava etiquette. And my thoughts on this these days, my realizations, if that's not too proud a word to use, are that's the essence, that we have to act like Vaishnavas and we have to be Vaishnavas. And as you just said, that's easier said than done. And therefore we have, you know, different systems. I'm trying to set up different systems within ISKCON to deal with these things, but at the very root of it is acting as devotees, so that we can have the kind of arguments that you talked about, where, no, I was wrong, you were right. No, I was wrong, you were right. I really like that a lot. And it would be a wonderful day when we can all behave in that way. So I guess in a practical level, that's what we should aim for, and by all the teachings in Srila Prabhupada's books and the chanting of the holy names, etc., hopefully our devotees are going in that direction. And then as a secondary step, to have some kind of net to catch people who may not, amongst us, our devotees, who may not always act in that way. Hopefully there can be a net of this systems that we're putting in place so that we don't fall too far into the lower modes of nature when we, when different quarrels or disagreements come about. But I really liked your point also about Varnashram, because, you know, Krishna created these differences that we have. They're actually God-given. The various natures that we have and the different cultural backgrounds that we come from, especially in ISKCON, which is such an incredibly international society. So if we see them as Krishna sent, and rather than just identify so much with our false ego, then I think that also I've found has helped a lot when we see that our differences are there because Krishna has put them there, and we can use them to cooperate and, to use a modern term, synergize, to use our differences in a positive way to spread Krishna consciousness rather than use them as a negative way to fight with one another and only look at the differences. Like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita about the different worldviews, that the in the mode of goodness we see the commonality, and in the mode of passion we concentrate on the differences, and the mode of ignorance we basically don't see anything. So it would be so nice if we can all gradually rise to the mode of goodness and see all the similarities that we have, despite you know, we have, as you were pointing out, the similarities of wanting to please Srila Prabhupada, of wanting to become real devotees, of wanting to chant the holy names without offense, and all those. We have so many things in common, but sometimes Maya tries to trick us into looking at the 2 or 3 or 4% that we have difference with one another. And if we could rather concentrate on all the similarities we have, and then find a nice, cordial, humble, Krishna conscious way to use those differences positively in Prabhupada's service, that would really create a very nice society. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Braj Bihari Prabhu. Braj Bihari Prabhu is performing one of the most important services for our society by actually utilizing various proven techniques and harmonizing them with true and genuine Vaishnava principles to help resolve conflict and quarrels amongst devotees. Prabhupada's very sincere and heartfelt blessings are certainly upon you and your wonderful service, attitude, and efforts. It's one of the greatest needs within our society. Because whatever else we do, if devotees cannot learn to come together and agree on a higher principle, then our progress will be paralyzed. So thank you very much. Let us all offer our gratitude to Braj Bihari Prabhu. I must go now, but my sincere and humble request is Braj Bihari Prabhu, come and sit here and you could answer questions of devotees in regard to your wonderful service. Do you all agree with this plan? It is the will of the Vaishnavas.
Hare Krishna. So Maharaj was saying that all progress is very much hampered by quarrel. And Priyavrata Maharaj, he stopped the quarreling by establishing boundaries and states. He made divisions. That was his strategy. And it is also said that good fences make good neighbors. So in our prominent spiritual institution that we're all part of. We have a multi-guru system on behalf of our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada with the GBC overseeing. So, as you know, sometimes we have quarreling and arguing. Sometimes it's between different groups with gurus with their disciples, sometimes groups of gurus and their disciples. The mood is different. Their views may be different. Their natures may be different. So sometimes there's a clash. So we want to come to some strategies and for wiping out the quarreling between within our institution, between these kinds of groups. So, do you think that it might be better for the gurus to have their own areas designated, like fences make good neighbors, or have no fences and no designated areas, or a combination of both, maybe? What are the dynamics that we should understand in these relationships to prevent quarreling and arguing between different gurus and their disciples within ISKCON?
I'm glad you asked a real simple question. First of all, that saying, good fences make good neighbors, was actually is written by Robert Frost, a poet from New England. And he was being facetious when he was writing that. He wasn't agreeing with that statement. It was kind of a... Anyway, I won't tell you the story of the whole poem. So that's your question's a very big question, but... I think maybe at the heart of the answer is when we were at Vyasa Puja yesterday and Yudhisthira Prabhu was reading us our rights, you know, so to speak. He was telling us what we can and can't do. And one of the things he mentioned was that no one in their offering should in any way denigrate previous acharyas, Srila Prabhupada, but he also said, basically, he kind of said that don't put Maharaj on a higher level than his godbrothers and things like that. So that mood that was mentioned yesterday by Yudhisthira Prabhu, if that prevails our society, that'll be a big help in this way. And we see, again, by Maharaj's example is so nice about how kind-heartedly and lovingly he deals with his godbrothers. So the way I see it is that there's two things. There's the Siddhanta and Vaishnava etiquette and the whole mood of Krishna consciousness. And then there's also in an organization, any organization, some of you I'm sure have studied our MBAs or have studied business or something. So it's good to have in any organization systems. Because even when you sometimes have good people and not very good systems in place, then that can also lead to trouble. So we should have systems in place that can compensate for, or at least can anticipate difficulties that may arise in our society. But they have to be based on the principles, which are guru, sadhu, shastra, Vaishnava etiquette, etc. I don't think I really would. It would be speculation on my point to get into the details of your answer right now, but just that they have good systems and most importantly, as Maharaj said, a cooperative spirit amongst the devotees. But at the same time, there are different devotees have different realizations about preaching, right? So it does make sense in one sense for a person who's trying to preach in a certain way in a certain city or a certain geographical location to be able to express that offering to Srila Prabhupada in a certain way. And if someone else wants to preach in that area and has a very different mood that may run counter to that other devotee's mood, then something probably has to be arranged so that they can either peacefully coexist or, you know, do what Priyavrata Maharaj did and, you know, make a little line on a map or something like that. Is that all right? I think someone here had a question. Yes, Prabhu?
Can you mention some of the systems that, for example, you said by establishing systems, we could help to alleviate this difficulty? For example?
One system could be that if you want to preach in someone else's area, then first you get permission and you sit down with that person and talk about what you want, what you plan to do, and get their consent before doing so. Something like that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
This Prabhu has a... Yes. Or Siddhanta may not have been the right word, but etiquette, Vaishnava Sadachar.
But my question is, can there be a good organization without Siddhanta being imbibed into it?
Well, you know, some people say that IBM is run well, or Xerox, or Reliance, or somebody like that. Some of these, well, maybe not Reliance right now, but anyway, some of these organizations people think run well, even though they're not run on Vaishnava Siddhanta. But ultimately, of course, from our understanding, no. But, you know, in the world today, we see that organizations seem to be run pretty well, even if they're not run by devotees. But if we can combine the two, if we can take some ideas of how to run organizations well and then apply them to serve Srila Prabhupada, like Srila Prabhupada told us that we could get ideas from the Catholic Church on how to organize things. He also once said we could get ideas from the Ramakrishna Mission about how to keep the founder of the mission in the center. So he did indicate that we could take ideas from other places. Atash, what is that? What is that? Krishna Sambandha, that to see the connection, we can use our Yukta Vairagya to, you know, we can use ideas from so many different places and use them in Krishna's service if they match our Siddhanta. Is that okay? Does that answer your question? Are there no chances of us getting bewildered by taking ideas from outside? Yes, there are chances. One has to be careful. And to, as Srila Prabhupada said, to catch the big fish and not get wet. So one should protect oneself, yeah. Adi Keshav Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, you're talking about ideas and...
If we act like Adi Keshav Prabhu, then there'll be no quarrels in this world.
You're talking about ideas taking from other organizations. Now, I'm just wondering about Maharaj Priyavrat. Now, for generations, he was acting like a monk.
Like a what?
He was like a monk, mendicant, away from social life. Then he was given this responsibility, all these worldly affairs. Obviously, there was no skill and all he had. So how is that he managed worldly affairs so nicely?
So I believe he attended the Wharton School of Business in Pennsylvania. No. It was in his in those days the lineages were obviously much purer, right? So he was coming in the Kshatriya line, so he naturally had that those innate abilities to rule like that. You know, just in now in Kali Yuga everything's so much like a Khichri, right? You know, I can sit here and give a class in the morning and then go outside and try to do a little management, and then after that try to make some money for the Vrindavan Gurukul, and then after that take out the garbage or something like that. So, you know, I can cover all four varnas within an hour. But you know, in previous ages they were much the lines were incredibly pure, and then these, you know, when someone was born in a Kshatriya line, it was just like, you know. So my understanding is that Priyavrata had that, in his conditioning. So it was, you know, it wasn't hard to do. And also, of course, he had the blessings of great, great devotees like Swayambhuva Manu and Lord Brahma. Is that okay? Yes, Prabhu?
In medicine, there is one typical system probably that we might adopt to. What they call it as primary prevention, secondary prevention, and tertiary prevention. They say all prevention, but the meanings are different.
Uh-huh.
Primary prevention means nobody suffers. Nobody becomes sick. So no need of hospital, no need of doctor, no need of nurses. That means in our terms, everybody behaves in a way by imbibing the Siddhanta. They love each other and there is no need of any institution resolving conflict. That is the best situation, but it doesn't always happen.
Right. If they were the first one was, then Madhavananda Prabhu and everyone would not have any service. So they would just sit in the temple all day and chant lax arounds. Go ahead.
Secondary prevention, they say, some people will misbehave and will fall sick. Then you should have doctors, hospitals, nurses and cure them. So the system that you are talking about, you should have a system in place wherein you can resolve the conflict. It is required because there will be some people who will misbehave. Tertiary prevention means there will be people who will be going in the court of law probably.
Will be what?
Going in the court of law against each other. Horrible disease develop. Like big cancer, gangrene, and then you need a surgical department where you can cut and remove the limb like that. Probably I feel like, you know, even in any situation, in any organization, this tertiary prevention, even maybe in a small level, required.
Yeah. Yes, because especially in Kali Yuga. But hopefully we can, by putting a lot of energy into the first and the second, the third becomes much more minimized. But you're right, in Kali Yuga, it's Kalo Dosha Nide Rajan, it's an ocean of faults. So there's always that very good likelihood of some problem coming up every now and then that makes it through those first and second stages that you said. Thank you for that analysis. I will use that. Can I borrow your analysis for my service? Yeah? Should I use your name? What? Copyright? Thank you. So, anything else?
Hare Krishna.
Where is Hare Krishna coming?
I want to know what is the difference between pride and self-respect. Like, one should not be proud,
right?
But also, he should not, you know, sacrifice his self-respect. It is told.
It's told, yes. Well, you know, there's different levels that a devotee is acting on, and you know, there's different. When we're on different levels of Krishna consciousness, different emphasis of our philosophy will take prominence, right? So someone's on a very, you know, high level of Krishna consciousness, they won't talk so much in terms of these differences that you're saying. As I think Maharaj pointed out last night, that on that level, everyone thinks, you know, someone thinks everyone else is a devotee except for myself, right? But we can't imitate that. So then we would more likely take to the philosophy that's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, if I can remember the shloka, anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. Did I get that right? Yeah? Okay. To accept things that are favorable and to reject things that are unfavorable, right? So in one sense, what you're saying is, when is that some, you know, self-confidence or something, when is that anukul and when is it pratikul? So we face that sometimes in dealing, like, for example, with children as they're growing up, that we want our children to feel successful in Krishna consciousness. See, there's some need in a conditioned soul to feel successful at something. And everyone can be, as Maharaj quoted that verse, Chatur Varnyam Maya Shristam Guna Karma Vibhagasa, that in one sense, that verse is saying that by Krishna's arrangement, we're all expert at something. We're all good at something, whether it's sweeping a floor, washing pots, or, you know, running a kingdom or a whole planet. Everyone has their God-given abilities to be good at something. And not necessarily on a highest level of devotion, but on a lower level, if somebody is successful at something, they tend to cling to that. So we want our children, for example, to feel that they're successful in Krishna consciousness. If they think that they're a flop, if they're useless at Krishna consciousness, then they'll try to be successful somewhere else. because that need in the condition, again, we're talking about in the conditioned soul, you know, in the not fully evolved soul, to feel successful at something is quite prominent. So similarly with the spiritual master, the spiritual master often is encouraging us, right? He's praising us. Oh, you're such a nice devotee. Attach us more and more to devotional service. Spiritual master may also sometimes choose to chastise us. And it's Prabhupada mentions, I forget if it's in the Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the spiritual master chastises the advanced disciple. Just like that, Mataji yesterday in her offering was talking about Guru Maharaj, you never chastise me. And what did he say? Maybe in the future you will. So when one comes to a certain level of Krishna consciousness, then that chastisement will be anukul, will be favorable for them. But if they're not very advanced, then they might get discouraged. You know, who does Guru Maharaj think he is anyway? You know, or whatever. We might not take it in the right way. So this concept, basically the question comes down to what is the idea of self-esteem within Krishna consciousness? As we make advancement, then our self-esteem, thinking ourselves lower than the straw on the street, is the most wonderful self-esteem in the world, right? And thinking oneself insignificant, it's great. But sometimes, though, it encourages us in our Krishna consciousness, and when we feel when the spiritual master, or when our parents, or when other devotees say, you know, that Prabhu, that's a really nice service that you're doing. That's really nice, and actually, it doesn't just make us proud, but it makes us more enthusiastic to render pleasing service to the devotees. So I guess it depends if that encouragement, if that self-esteem, I think you, what did you use? Self-confidence, was that the word?
Self-respect.
If that's leading us closer to Krishna's lotus feet and closer to humble service, then that is favorable. If it's leading us to think that we're better than everyone else and I'm God's gift to ISKCON, then that's not so favorable, and it has to be checked. So therefore, when we're dealing with people, very much we deal with them on an individual basis. As we're all, because all of us here, I'm sure, are trying to bring some people closer to Krishna consciousness. For some of us, we may be full-time preachers and we're trying to bring thousands of people. And for others, it may be somebody at work or our own children. But the more we know about that person, and then we take the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness and apply it to the stage that they're at, the level that they're at, and we understand what is from the philosophy, what will bring them to the next step, and then the next step, and the next step, and we encourage them in that way, I think that'll help them a lot. Is that okay? Does that answer your question?
In relation with conflict, I was asking this question. His pride is always detrimental. It is material consciousness.
So you mean I answered the wrong question, huh? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So to think that I am better than other is not at all Vaishnava consciousness.
Right.
Especially whenever there is conflict. But when you are really sincerely trying to resolve the conflict, but the opposite side is just, you know, disrespecting you all the time. So how much, what is the level of, you know, humility we should present?
What is the level of what?
Humility.
Humility.
And just go on tolerating, even though you're trying sincerely, and how much we should have self-respect. So at this point, I'm not going to try. I will live up to Krishna.
Well, that's a very nice attitude. Often conflict comes about when we don't, especially amongst devotees, we don't understand or we misunderstand the other party, especially their intentions. I mean, and often then we by misunderstanding their intentions, we get in a disagreement. So the process that we recommend often is to just have some kind of dialogue, often with a third person. Many of you have taken the course on mediation, where the mediator is just trying to help each other understand each other's point of view. And often just that alone brings the heat of the conflict down quite a bit. Because usually there's some kind of need, and sometimes it's a spiritual one, that we're just trying to fulfill. But in the course of trying to fulfill that, we may step on someone else's transcendental toes. And then there's some conflict involved. So one thing we should be careful about, especially in conflicts amongst devotees, is to avoid questioning too quickly the motivations of the other devotees. That's what really hurts, I think, devotees. We may make mistakes in our service. We may even make mistakes against the Shastra. But I think for most of us, we do have a sincere desire to serve the spiritual master, to serve Shri Shri Radha Gopinath. And to question that hurts very much at the core of who we're trying to become as devotees. So the process, so I mean, just to give you an example, this is just such a simple example, but it just shows you how conflicts come about. I heard this one when I was giving this course once, and I think most of you know Lakshmi Moni Mataji, who she visits here sometimes, right? And she runs a school for teenage girls. And she had this one conflict with this one of her students. Because the student, they live about, their ashram is about 2.5 miles from the temple. So they have to get in a bus and drive to the temple for Guru Puja every day. And so there was one student who was always making all the other students late for Guru Puja. And she was always kind of, you know, making sure her hair was right in front of the mirror, whatever she was doing. And she was making the whole rest of the ashram late. And Mataji was getting so upset and you know, just, you know, thinking, she didn't say this, but, you know, thinking, oh, this person's such a space case and this and this and this. But really what it was that there was this one young man who was at Guru Puja that she wanted to, you know, look attractive for, whatever. Lakshmi Moni Mataji at one time was almost thinking, maybe this girl is purposely trying to upset me. But that wasn't the case at all. She was just trying to get, you know, some of what she perceived to be her needs met. So when they just sat down for a couple of minutes and talked it out, they could iron out their disagreements. So sometimes it's just little things like this. I once did a mediation where there was a devotee who went up to another devotee and just said, Ekalavya Prabhu, I haven't seen you at Mangal Arti the last few days. Are you okay? And he was really concerned for Ekalavya. Oh, you know, of course, we know Ekalavya never misses Mangal Arti, but just as an example. And then after the person walked away, Ekalavya turned to his friend and he said, "Ah, can you believe that guy, Braja Bihari? He's always on my case about Mangal Arti. He's so critical. He wasn't at Mangal Arti last week." So I was thinking, you know, is he sick? Is there some service I can do for him? And he was thinking, oh, you know, I'm so proud. I'm chastising him in this indirect way. So just, again, just sitting down for a couple of minutes and we, you know, work things out. So sometimes it's if we don't have the first stage that Prabhuji was mentioning and we have to come to the second stage, it's good to sometimes just clear the air, sit down for a few minutes sometimes and work things out. And also to work them out, nip them in the bud before they become bigger things. Because sometimes we see that if you just let disagreements, misunderstandings go on for years and years, the distance between the two Prabhus becomes further and further. Is that okay?
I heard the term self-respect twice, and according to our Siddhanta, Tranadapi Sunichayena Tarorapi Sahishnuna, yes. Is not this term self-respect equal to false pride?
I didn't hear the last sentence.
Self-respect is equal to false pride?
Self-respect, no, it depends on if it's based on our false ego or our real ego. Is that a good answer or is that not satisfying? If it's based on our false ego, then yes, it's proud. If our self-respect is based on the fact that, well, hey, I'm also a devotee of Krishna, I'm also trying to serve Krishna, and thinking ourselves a servant of the servant of the servant of devotees, that's a proper identification. So it's not that we're getting rid of all identifications, right? We're just trying to clear away our false identification and develop the real identification of a servant of the servant of the servant. So we can take, you know, it's all a question of use of words. We can take pride in being the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. Yes, that's my position. I'm very happy with that position. I don't want any other position. Is that okay? Anything else? Okay. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.